Okay. So, does someone want to give me a recap of yesterday? Right. We moved from the question that we dealt with for a few days on the nature of either the exemption or prohibition or whatever it might be of blowing shofar on Shabbos and the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. And then yesterday we moved to the question of whether you fulfill the mitzvah if you choose to blow on Shabbat, which is against the rabbinic law. Okay, so let me just get letters written. So, someone want to give me a summary? What did we see?
You were talking about if you say the bracha.
So we right. Like, so we looked at several other examples.
We were talking about Shema.
Right. So we said
Shema,
right. Right. So we looked at Shema. We looked at Sukkah. And we saw that in the context of Sukkah, what did Tosfot say? Do you fulfill the mitzvah?
Tosfot said no.
Right, Tosfot said no. Right, Tosfot's simple understanding is that Tosfot says no. If the rabbis say don't do it, so then you're done. You don't fulfill the mitzvah. And again, some of the Achronim push back on this, but the simple understanding of Tosfot is that somehow the rabbis have the ability to make it that you don't get reward for performing a mitzvah, which on a biblical level you're obligated to, and the rabbi said, don't do it that way, or that's not good enough. And we gave several justifications. Tosfos doesn't really explain why that is. We said it could be that he believes that Chazal have some sort of metaphysical control over the nature of reality, which is surprising, but as I noted to you in the Or HaChaim in Korach, he seems to believe that that is the case. Or you think more along the lines of Yonatan, which is no. God wants you to keep the system. So if you go against the system, so you don't get reward. It's, you know, there's a broader perspective going on here, and God doesn't want you to do it, so you're not going to get reward. Or it's a full out, I think that was the way you framed it. And then Rami, it's maybe it's mitzvah baba vera. And then all these could in some way say you don't fulfill it. The other alternative is to say, look, the rabbis don't have the ability to change reality. Or even if it's in Avera, it's a mitzvah at the same time. It's a complex situation. Maybe you shouldn't do it, but you get some sort of reward anyways. We saw that that's really the way the Ran seems to take it. The Ran says, look, when he was talking about Rabbi Gamliel's Pesach Matzah Maror, where he says, Lo Kiyem doesn't mean Lo Kiyem. It means you didn't do it properly. And in the case of Sukkah, it doesn't. When it says, Lo Kiyam to mitzvah Sukkah Miyamecha, that you never fulfilled Sukkah, it means you never did it properly. The problem, obviously, with this, even though it makes more sense in the sense that it doesn't posit that Chazal are changing the nature of reality or anything like that, the problem with it is then what exactly did Chazal accomplish in their Gzeira, right? Meaning once Chazal say, don't do it, but if you do it, God will give you a check anyways, it's a little bit weird because, you know, it leaves you wondering, so why are we listening to Chazal in that case? Yeah, that's what the system says, but if that's not reflected in whether God actually gives you a check in Shemayim. So that's a little bit weird, but not impossible to. So we had seen the Ran and Tosfot, which seemed to be the two extremes. And what we'd started with is, as Adam mentions, the case of Kriyat Shema and the case of Rabbeinu Yonah. So that is where we had left off yesterday. So Rabbeinu Yonah takes up the question. And his, what does he say? So his first, right, he takes a slightly different angle on it, which is not just do you get reward, but if you miss Chatzot, should you say Shema? Right, meaning this is taking the question a little bit farther, is that if you think there's value to that which you do, which is against the rabbinic restriction, so maybe you should try to avoid that situation, but if you find yourself in that situation, you find yourself after Chatzot, so now you should keep the mitzvah because, you know, Chazal can't remove the value from it, so you should do it anyways. Right, so that was his question, right? Because he says, as he said, Kasha came in the Kriyat Shema Chiyuv Min HaTorah, Hei Achicholin Chachamin Lofacho Mimena. Once you say that Kriyat Shema is biblical, so how can the rabbis get out of it? So here he raises several possibilities. So let's go back from the beginning of his first possibility, which is what we had left off with yesterday, right? From Ve'it to Amri. So who wants to take Rabbeinu Yonah?
Can do it.
Oh, I see a brave taker. Good. Okay, take Rabbeinu Yonah.
Okay. Yesh lashkot, and there is to ask the Rabbanon. Damuril afilu di'eved eno yotze ela achatzot. But even if you pass this man and you didn't fulfill it, you could still you're still not. Wait. Even if you already did it, you're not yotze until chatzot.
Meaning that you only fulfill after chatzot. In other chatzot, my yehidina. Right. Yeah. This is the question, right? So what should you do if it's after midnight?
The Gemara. If you say it, shelo yikachla kasha.
I hear, I think, Roy Ginsburg in the background of somebody.
Sorry, someone's loud in the background. Okay, yeah. Now,
okay, yeah.
How could the Chachamim exempt you from fulfilling the full deraita by limiting how much time you have?
Okay, good. So, V'itamre,
and there is to say, that it makes sense, the achachatzot kore ota belo brachot. You can, after chatzot, you can still say it without the bracha, because Shema is the whole night. The brachot are only the rabbanon. The brachot are only the rabbanon.
Meaning the rabbis, bishalahem, in their own rule, meaning brachot are rabbinic, so the rabbis, in rabbinic law, right, they can prevent you from saying it at all.
They don't say it. They don't say you can read the whole night. Even though you don't get a full reward, if you read it with a bracha, you would get more reward. Still, you get some reward. Even so, there's still some benefit, this reward. Since you fulfilled your obligation from the Torah.
Right, so his first, his first suggestion is what? Is like, right, it's in this sense like the Ran. Right? Is that even though the rabbi said don't do it, but it's even more extreme than the Ran. I mean, the Ran said, if you violate the Dirabanan, so it's imperfect. And he says, even though you violate the Dirabanan, you should proactively go and say Kriyat Shema. Right? Which seems to take it even a step further than the Ran. But he says that's only by biblical law, because as we discussed, it makes sense that there's a certain limitation on... Ezra, you're insisting on sitting here for a little bit? Okay. Because on biblical law, right, rabbis don't have complete power. They can't change it, so they tell you, try to say it for chatzot. You don't, you can still say it. But rabbinic law, they are completely in control. Okay, now Rabbeinu Yonah pushes back on that, and he says, V'im domar. Yeah?
V'im tomar, and if you say, V'lama ino omer ha'brachot, and why don't you say the brachot?
V'im tomar is always a question, right? It's always a question. V'im tomar, right?
Yeah, always, so why don't you say the bracha with the Shema? That we say when you say Kriya Shema of Shachar and Shachal Pishav of Shema Kriyata, even though the time of Shema already passed, Shomar Brachot, that you still say the brachot. You're still able to say the brachot even if the time has passed. But I think it's saying that you don't get scar. I'm assuming that's what it means.
He says, meaning you don't lose the full bracha, right? So right now Rabbeinu Yonah goes even farther and he says, but wait a second, once I can say Shema, so maybe his first possibility is, look, the rabbis can't stop you from fulfilling the... Ezra. Can't stop you from fulfilling the biblical mitzvah. But they can't stop you from the rabbinic mitzvah. Now Rabbeinu Yonah goes farther and he says, maybe even rabbinic law, they'll tell you there's ideal fulfillment of rabbinic law and not ideal fulfillment. So yes, you should say it before, but maybe after the time you should say it even if you say even the brachot. Okay, so you lose the time. Right? I mean, maybe even the rabbinic law we don't completely we don't completely devalue the performance of rabbinic law outside the proper time. Right? Okay. So V'yesh lomar.
V'yesh lomar, and there are those who answer differently. They got a Kriyat Shema.
No, not differently. Some answer. V'yesh lomar. V'im tomar is a question. V'yesh lomar is an answer.
Oh, okay. And there's those who answered. They got a Kriyat Shema Shalaila, that Kriyat Shema of the night. Achmir v'yoter, we're more strict. Shalaila. He's manshina. The night time is the time of sleeping, so you're more strict that maybe you're going to fall asleep and you're going to miss it. That you're able to, if you know you're able to fill the obligation, mechiyav kriyat shema, kriyat shema, mechiyav brachot achal chatzot, and the mechiyav brachot after chatzot, yomav bilibo, you'll say to yourself, why do I have to go out and burden myself by saying it right now? To read it immediately. Since I'm able to fulfill all my obligation after chatzot,
so why can't I do it now? So let's analyze his response. So his answer is, after the time in the morning, you're allowed to say kriyat shema even with the brachot, even though it's not ideal. At night, you can't. Because the rabbis were stricter. But what is he say, right? What is that? So let's get to the core. Does he think that rabbis have the ability to set a hard limit on rabbinic law? Meaning, say, if you don't perform the rabbinic law perfectly, you can't do it at all. Do they have the ability to do that? The authority?
Yes.
Yes. Right? So Rabban Yonah is telling you they have the authority. But, and you always have to remember this, just because someone has the authority to do something doesn't mean that they always do it. So Rabbi Yonah's answer is very nuanced. Brachot are rabbinic. He maintains from the beginning to the end that if the rabbis want to, they can set a hard limit and say, either you do it the way we say, or you don't do it at all. They can, that doesn't mean they will. Right? And therefore Rabbi Yonah suggests that in terms of rabbinic power, they have the power over rabbinic law entirely. They don't have full power over biblical law. So within rabbinic law, then what question do we need to ask to figure out whether their limitation was absolute or not?
Whether you get schar or not. If it's
no, not about schar. For rabbinic law.
Are you allowed to say the brachos after 12 o'clock? Or after chatzot?
But what's the question, according to Rabbi Yonah, that you need to ask in general, right? Broaden this, abstract it. According to Rabbi Yonah, whenever you have a rabbinic law, the rabbis have the right to tell you, the authority to tell you, do it by 9 o'clock or don't do it at all. But if it's not a question of a limitation on their authority that tells you whether or not they're going to say that, then what does determine whether or not they tell you at 9 o'clock that's ideal or at 9 o'clock that's your absolute deadline? If it's not their authority, what drives it?
If it's going to protect the deraita.
Or whatever, right? Meaning, even more broadly, Rabban Yonah is saying, look, you have the authority if you want to set those limits on the Derabbanan. You've just got to ask yourself whether it's worth it. One reason why it might not be worth it is, does it protect a biblical law or not? What does it accomplish? But you should notice that in Rabban Yonah, this suggestion is not a question. He doesn't fundamentally distinguish. It's not like he says the rabbis have full authority over Ezra, little choir. It's not like they say you have full authority over brachot in the morning or at night, and you don't have full authority over the brachot in the day. The rabbis always have full authority. In terms of power, they can set this restrictions. It's just a question of what they're going to do. So then you have to ask practical questions or strategic questions, right? What made most sense? What is the best way to construct it? But at this point, Rabbi Yonah therefore says there are two questions you have to ask in every issue. One, is it biblical or rabbinic? If it's rabbinic, if it's biblical, the rabbis don't have the ability to tell you that you don't fulfill the mitzvah. They don't have that authority. They don't have that control. If it's rabbinic, they have that control. That doesn't mean they use it. Right? They have the power. It doesn't mean they use it. But that's a secondary question where you have to ask, what type of takana would best accomplish our goals? Okay? But at this stage, fundamentally, he's very much Ron-like. Right, meaning, rabbis have limited authority in biblical law, unlimited authority fundamentally on biblical law, on rabbinic law. That just doesn't mean that they necessarily implement it. Yeah, Yonatan.
So he's saying that this was a gzeir asiyag to protect the deoraita, right?
Yes.
Making the rabbinic brachot until chatzot. But I don't see how it's such a great siyag. I mean, if someone is already by chatzot, not saying the bracha or kriyat shema at all, because he thinks he can do it later, I mean, I would assume that he would have either have he would either remember after chatzot, or he would have forgotten before chatzot.
Well, so what he's so Rabbi Yonah's playing on is that the Gemara says that the reason we limit it to chatzot is because we don't want someone to come home in the evening, eat his meal, take a nap, whatever, and then forget Kriyat Shema. Meaning, you're coming up with, what if it's 11:55? That's not what Chazal are saying. Chazal are saying, look, we'd rather you say it at, let's say, a perfect 12-hour day. We'd rather you say it at 6 o'clock, right? Daven Marv, 6 o'clock, and then eat dinner, and then, do your errands. And right? The logic goes as follows. If we tell you you can wait till 12, no problem whatsoever. If we tell you you can wait till morning, so look, I have a busy night. Sunset is 6 o'clock, but I'm not getting back to work till 7 o'clock. And when I get back, I don't really want to run right to Maariv. I want a bite to eat. I need to relax. I need to watch something. I need to unwind, right? So you're afraid, right, that what's going to happen? If you tell him you can do it all night, he'll say, I'll get around to it, right? Nightfall starts at 6, I'll come home at 7, I'll eat till 7:30, till 8, I'll watch something, then I'll go, right? But if you tell him, no, you only have X number of hours, so he'll say, okay, let me just get it out of the way, right?
I don't think there's really such a difference there, though, between Chatzot and Dawn. I mean, Chatzot is already late enough that, to me at least, especially in times of the Gemara,
so
it wouldn't make such a difference.
Right, so, you could play with it. You could say the guy is saying, look, chances are I will go, I'll go to sleep within an hour of nightfall, but I always wake up early. I'll daven Maariv when I wake up, right? Meaning, you can come up with whatever you want to imagine, practically, right? Meaning, you could say, which is true, right? If you think about it, when you're a teenager, you always want to, not all of you, I know you all daven Vasikin, it's all wonderful, right? But some teenagers want to sleep late, so even if they're good from teenagers, what they want to know is, what's the latest I can daven without missing Sosman Kriyat Shema, okay, right? A frum but lazy teenager, right, will sleep until Sosman Kriyat Shema, okay, right? But that's the tefillah shailas that you ask when you're a teenager. When you are, working already, and you're in, this happened in Toronto all the time. And so, the earliest you can daven, according to any shita, is like 6:45 in the morning when you can start davening, right? And you need to be at work by 7, right? Then you're asking the shayla, how early can I get up and daven, right? So it could be that what they're worried about is, look, I'll go to sleep at 8 o'clock, and I'm sure I'll wake up 2 hours before dawn, and I'll daven Maariv then. Right, and then you sleep in till Vasikin, right? You sleep in till Vasikin, right? So again, we can come up with practical configurations of what this is, but that's what their concern is, right? Is that there is a difference between Chatzot.
For that case though, I would just say, why would they not institute that you should say this before you go to sleep, instead of, putting these
The ideal time to say it is right away. Right, really, you're supposed to say it right away. But we always have... The ideal thing to do is the daven Maariv first, right? You're not really... Right, unless you have a kavua time where you always daven Maariv, right? You really are not supposed to be doing other things, right? The first thing you do at night really should be you go to shul so that you daven, right? This is true of all tefillah, right? Once Zman Shacharit comes in the morning, you're not allowed to do work, you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to take care of your own business, nothing, right? You're not supposed to check emails, right? Like, you're not supposed to do anything, right? You're supposed to daven and then deal with everything else. That's the ideal. The question is, what's the latest, right? And there, Chazal say, if we set no limit, so you'll just keep pushing it off. If we set a limit, now we can talk about what the limit is. It's a machloket in the Mishnah. 4 hours into the night, 6 hours into the night. But if you set a limit, so then people will get around to it.
I understand the reasoning for setting a limit. I just don't think that setting a limit, especially at that time of episode so late, is really practical. Okay. I don't understand.
Look, I can't speak to the practical times in the Mishnah, right? They thought it made sense in their times to set it to Chatzot. I can't tell you. I can imagine cases of why that's true. I don't know, right? Meaning, we can... Okay. But I can't speak to that more than that. Okay, but this is possibility one in Rabbeinu Yonah. But then, Rabbeinu Yonah brings a much more Tosfot-esque position, and he says, V'nira limori harav neiru. So it seems to my Rebbe, so this is actually Rabbeinu Yonah, because this is written by the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah. So Mori is just Rabbeinu Yonah, probably. Unless it's the Rebbe of Rabbeinu Yonah, in which case it's the Ramban. But I assume this is actually Rabbeinu Yonah, but I don't know. Now, Neiru in general, do you know what this means? Did you bother looking it up? Okay, it's Natre Rachmana Uparke, which is Aramaic for may God protect him, right, and redeem him, right? I can chat it to you if you want to see what this is. Stop the share for a second. It's here. Natre Rachmana Uparke. Right? It's may God protect him and redeem him. Right? Some of these words you should have seen before in your life. Right? Like the Shoresh Natra, you should know. You're like, where do I know it from? You know the Niture Karta, right? It's an Aramaic phrase. It means the Nitura is the Shomrim, Karta is the ear, is the city. Niture Karta means Shomrim, Shomrei Ha'ir, right? The protectors of Jerusalem. That's what it means, right? Okay. I'm not saying that's what they are. I'm just saying that's what they call themselves. That's not.
It's a very ironic name.
Yeah, I didn't say it wasn't. It's from the Gemara, right? Okay, fine. So let's see what he says. V'nira lemori harav natre rachmano parke. What does he say? You want to continue, Andrew?
Yeah, the tzvira lehu that appears to them. The tzvira lehu rabban appears to the rabban and shach filu kriyat shma atzma shehu min haTorah. That even though kriyat shma is from the Torah. You don't read it the whole night after Chatzot. So every time, if you pass this, I mean, they're able to exempt you from the Daraisa obligation because you passed Chatzot.
Right. And they do this, as he says, O Mishum Kiyum Mitzvah Atzma Dachizim B'Lulav. Right? And he says, and they do the same thing by Lulav. What's his proof? Shemitzvatom and Atarah Yom Rishon.
Yom Rishon is a deraita. Vafilu hachin, even so, shechol Yom Rishon Shabbat, if it falls on Shabbat, patru chachamim leitula mishum gizera.
Right.
They take it away because of gizera, the shema yavru arba amot, berush tarabim. They maybe carry for amos, so they take away the deraita obligation of the first day.
Right, and then he gives you a lot of other examples, which I'll tell you outside, like right? Because if we read all of them, it's a bit long, but if you
manage to get through... Yeah, we went over the whole thing, it was about tzitzit.
Right, so one is tzitzit. So I'll tell you what this. I'll read it to you and explain. Megabe sadin betzitzit. Right. So this is a huge machlok rishon on what this means. But when you're putting in linen in tzitzit, afal pisha Torah chayva otovi tira kilayim leinyan tzitzit. The Torah allows you to have kilayim in tzitzit. Right. And the tchelet is always going to be wool, and therefore, if you have a linen baguette, it's always tchelet. Dichtiv lo tilbashat neves hamichlay gedilim ta'aser lecha. That's right. This is based on right, this drush at the beginning of Yevamot, because the parsha of Tzitzit is right next to the parsha of Kilayim. The alma mashmasha sedin shu shel pishtan imatchelet shutzavu al tzemar, and therefore you can have a linen garment with the tchelet, which is wool, mutar manat Torah afilu achi ayu potrinoto. Nevertheless, you're exempt. Now, there's a machlok rishon. What does it mean exempt? Does it mean you therefore shouldn't wear linen garments, or you can wear linen garments and you don't have to wear tzitzit? But he's taking the latter position, and there he says Beit Shammai gzeira mishum ksut laila, because Beit Shammai is worried that you'll wear it at night, and if you wear it at night when you're not chayav in tzitzit, or it'll be nighttime clothing, whatever the case may be. Another machlok rishonim. I think we talked about this over the summer for those of you who came to the tzitzit shir. We're worried you might wear the linen garment in a time when you're not chayav and tzitzit, and then if you put the tchelet on, so you're wearing shatnez without fulfilling the mitzvah. Klomar afal bisha imayal lovesha do biyom. Even if you would wear it during the day, mechuyav latil bo tzitzit min haTorah, you'd have to put tzitzit on biblically. Afilo achi patru to shil b'shenev lo tzitzit. We let you wear a linen garment without tzitzit. Kevin Delilah in his man shel tzitzit, because we're worried that since the nighttime, he's following here the Rambam, that the night is not a time when you have to wear tzitzit. The mitzvah tzitzit en noheged el biyom, because the mitzvah tzitzit only applies during the day. The chtiburi temotos chartem, because it says you'll see them, you'll remember them. The mashma calls man sheish bo re'iyah. only in a time when you would see them, yesh bo zichira, then you remember them, because man she'en bo ri'iyah, ein bo zichira. So when you don't remember, see them, you don't remember them, meaning at night you don't wear tzitzit. All that is v'gazru yom atu layla. And therefore, we don't even let you wear a linen garment with tchelet during the day, because we're worried you might keep it on into the night. Haray, conclusion. Shechayav v'natarash lol v'vosh talit shal pishtan b'yom b'lo tzitzit shal tchelet. Biblically, you're obligated to not wear a linen garment if you're not going to be able to wear tzitzit with tchelet. And nevertheless, Beit Shammai said, just wear your linen garment without tzitzit, because we're worried you'll end up wearing it during the night. And here he paskins like Beit Shammai. All that gets back to the case of Kriyat Shema. Afal pishe mitzvat kriyat shema kol halayla, even though shema is all night, minat Torah, afilo achi patru to chachamim mishum siyad kedekativna. Okay, that was a very, very long claim. What does Rabbeinu Yonah say? What does he not say? So, does he say you get reward for the biblical mitzvah? We don't know. Right? We don't know. Meaning, right, in this one, all is he tells, remember, Rabbeinu Yonah started with a much more ambitious position, which was, even the rabbis tell you you shouldn't do it, if it turns out that it's after Chatzot, his first position was, you should say Shema. Now what is he saying? Second answer, you shouldn't say Shema. Does that tell us whether you would get reward if you did it? No, it's just the most ambitious position, right? So we really had three positions. You had Rabbeinu Yonah's first answer was, even when the rabbis in certain cases say don't do it, you should do it, right? It's just not ideal, right? And then he says, even within rabbinic law, there might be cases where they would tell you to do it in a bidyavid fashion, and cases where they wouldn't. Then you have the second position of Rabbeinu Yonah, which is, ideally you shouldn't do it. But we still don't know if that means you shouldn't do it, but if you did it, you would get reward. But you still, on balance, shouldn't do it. Or, no, you won't get reward. We know that Tosfot says you don't get reward. That's what it sounds like. And the Ran sounds like, post facto, you would get some reward. Right? Because the rabbis don't have the control over those mitzvot. Yes, Yonatan.
So, how is tzitzit and lulav like at all relevant to Shema?
Because those are all cases where Shema, they're telling you to say it by Chatzot, and after that maybe don't do it. Shofar, tzitzit, and lulav are more extreme. Right? Shofar and lulav, they're telling you, biblically you should be doing this, and we're telling you not to. Tzitzit is sort of like that too. You should be wearing tzitzit, we're telling you don't.
I don't think those are parallel cases, though, because by all three of those cases, there's another deal right to lotase that they're trying to prevent you from doing. By Shema, there's no lotase they're trying to prevent you from doing. It's only an ase of saying Shema.
Good. So Yehonatan is, right, is five steps ahead of me, right? And I've presented it so far as either you can say you don't get any reward, or you do get reward, or, right, maybe you shouldn't proactively do it, but we don't know whether you get reward or not, right? And I have assumed until now that whatever is true of Kriyat Shema is true of Sukkah, is true of Lulav, is true of Tzitzit, is true of Shofar. But that might be wrong, right? That might be wrong. Who says that's wrong, right? Who says that we've laid out all the possibilities, but these are the possibilities, but they don't apply equally to all rabbinic law. So who says that? Oh, good, you didn't get to it yet. Baruch Hashem. It's the source I told you not to read. So, good, Yehonatan was machaving to it. That's the Chalkat Yoav's claim. Right? Is that it's very nice to say that it's always like the Ran, or always like Tosfot. But that's not true. Just like we saw in Rabbeinu Yonah, that even with rabbinic law, he was willing to distinguish between cases where the rabbis would say, ideally say brachot by this time, but if not, say it anyways, and cases where say it by this time, and if you miss that time, don't say it at all. It could be that the same thing is true in all these, and maybe these aren't equivalent, right? In each case, you have to ask it independently. Very good. So hold your thought till we see the Chalked Yav for 5 minutes, and hopefully we'll finish that today so that you feel closure on this sugya before you go on your trip, okay? So, to bring it to shofar, it's normally quoted in the name of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger is the one in several places who says, okay, let's just take it to shofar. Shofar, do you or do you not fulfill the mitzvah? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger tells you, what does he say? Do you guys read Rabbi Akiva Eiger? So he says,
we read it.
You read it, okay. So what does he say? Tell me outside and then we'll look at it.
We didn't really fully understand it, but we were thinking that shofar is allowed on Shabbat, but
it's not allowed on Shabbat. Rabbinically,
at first it was allowed on Shabbat, but they made a gzera that wouldn't be allowed on Shabbat, and then something to do with about food.
So here's how it goes. He says the halacha is you don't blow the shofar on Shabbat, but if a kid is blowing it on Shabbat, you're allowed to let him keep blowing. Okay. So now he says, "V'gam b'shofar ika chinuch mitzvah." He says, "Why should I let a kid keep blowing the shofar on Shabbat?" He says, "It's very simple, because even though you shouldn't do it, mitzvah de'bitkiato mekayim mitzvah de'shofar. Fundamentally, the mitzvah still exists. So you, as an adult, shouldn't do it, but you're going to stop a kid. Why? It's fundamentally a mitzvah." The gam gadol shetokeh b'shabbat kiyem mitzvah shofar. Even if you, an adult, would blow the shofar on Shabbat. You fulfill the mitzvah because you're allowed to blow the shofar biblically on Shabbat. This sounds very much like the Ran, right? Ella, the Avar al Shvut Shabbat. You fulfill the mitzvah d'oraita and you violated a law of the Rabbanan. Two things at once. But he says that's not true. And a totally different case is Achila Shalala Menuyev. I think I sent out a text about this a few days ago, but maybe you forgot it already that I sent it, or I should have resent it, which is the case of Karban Pesach, that the only people who are allowed to eat it are Menuyin, are people who are part of the group. Right? Leka mitzvah klal, the mitzvah said, Achila Basar, Leka b'shalala Menuyin. Right? You don't let a kid who's not part of the group eat, because if you're not part of the group, there's no mitzvah at all of eating from the Karban Pesach, so it's completely valueless on a biblical level. Right, you have to be part of a group. Right, that's the halacha. That which is a fascinating sugya for Karban Pesach, but not for now. Yeah, Yehonatan.
A bit of a side point. Would Rabbi Akiva Eiger say that you don't stop an adult if he's blowing shofar on Shabbos?
So it sounds like you would, right? Because the adults are bound by rabbinic law, right? So he would say you can't let them do it, but a kid sort of slips through the cracks because it's a very weird shita. There is chinuch because it's fundamentally a mitzvah, meaning the mitzvah exists, there's just a rabbinic restriction on top of it. But the kids, you shouldn't tell them to do it, but if they're doing it, you don't have to stop them, because they're not really bound in rabbinic law, and what he's doing is fundamentally valuable, but an adult who's obligated to listen to rabbinic law, you would stop them, even though, he's very clear, you get the mitzvah. Right? So he takes the very shocking position, which is, yes, if you blew the shofar this a week from this coming Shabbat, you would get a mitzvah. And even though you would get a mitzvah, you shouldn't do it. The rabbis can't change the reality that you get schar. They can't do that. And he seems to go even farther, right? You shouldn't do it. But even if you did it, not only can't the rabbis remove the schar in some metaphysical way, even the fact that you went against the system and you shouldn't have done it doesn't change the fact that you get a check in heaven. Right? He just says you get a check in heaven, because all the rabbis can tell you is don't do it. But if you do it, they have no effect. They can't change the reality that you performed a mitzvah. Right? That's his very extreme formulation of this position. And the Avni Nezer, right, who was the Sachet Shavu Rebbe, says the same thing. He says, Achnire divadaya tosvet itlua demordechai lekev nechamim ein yechalim lakar davar menat Torah rak b'shei ve'al ta'aseh. Right? Since the rabbis can only passively tell you not to do something, right? ... Imkein lo akru chachamim a mitzvah aseh klal shiyeh batel mitzvah let's go b'shabbat. Since, right? And he makes the argument a little bit different than Rabbi Eiger. He says like this. The rabbis only have the power to passively tell you not to keep the Torah. That implies that they have no power to change the fabric of the Torah in any substantive way. All they can tell you is, just don't do it. Let the mitzvah exist and avoid it. right? Fail to perform it. But since their power is fundamentally passive, right, is they can stop you from doing something, that bolsters the notion that they're not really changing the schar. Because the second you would say, no, 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 even in heaven you didn't get a mitzvah of blowing the shofar, that would imply rabbinic power over the fabric of Torah. And what the Avnei Nezer claims is the fact that the nature of the rabbinic power to uproot the Torah is passive, that shows that at best they can tell you what to do, but they can't tell you what is. Right? And that's why they can't tell you to violate an Isser, because violating an Isser, telling you not to perform a positive commandment, right? Okay, they're telling you to give up on reward. That's one thing. But to tell you to violate a mitzvah, an aveira, they're telling you that something is bad is good. They can't do that. And by the same notion, he says, they can't tell you that something is a mitzvah, that's a mitzvah, is now valueless. All they can do is tell you, even though it has value, don't do it. That they can do. Right? And I think, right, the lumdus of what he's getting at is that what the secret behind the principle that Chazal can only uproot the Torah passively and not actively isn't just that they can, it's not a distinction between passive and active. It's a distinction between, can they control your actions, or can they change the fabric of reality, of spiritual reality? And he says, all they can do is tell you what to do. Meaning, don't do a mitzvah aseh. But they can't change reality. And since they can't change reality, they can't tell you to violate an aveira, because that would imply that something that is wrong is no longer wrong. Like that they can't do. And they also can't make it that you don't get reward for a mitzvah. They can say, don't do it. Just let me finish my sentence, and then Ezra, and then Yonatan. They can tell you, don't do a mitzvah, because then they're saying, look, I understand it's valuable, but we have ancillary reasons why we tell you to avoid it. That they can do. But if you went ahead and did it, the reality still exists out there that the mitzvah is real. And therefore you get reward despite the fact that you shouldn't be doing it. Right? That seems to be the Avnei Nezer's argument. Yes, Ezra. Not my Ezra.
So
yes.
What about like when we do Yom Tov Sheni, isn't that a case of where there's something Darabanan, and you say a bunch of like tefillot for Yom Tov, but because it's not actually that day, isn't there a problem of like Rachel Avatala? So isn't that a Darabanan telling you to violate a Daraita?
So that gets complicated, right? Because that's not really a Gzeira, that's a Takana to say it, and Bracho to begin with are rabbinic, right? And Rachel Avatala, right? Rabbinic, Daraita, depends on the cases, right? Meaning the Rishonim ask this, which is how exactly do you construct it? But it's not so obvious, right? Meaning, saying an extra bracha when Chazal tell you, right? It's right. There's not really a levatala, right? You're doing it for a reason. Vatala would be for nothing, right? Meaning, it's no different than Hanukkah, right? Hanukkah is holy rabbinic, and there are brachot involved, but we tell you to do it. So Yom Tov Sheni, they just create a Yom Tov, right? It has its own set of problems, but they don't seem to be telling you to violate anything, because in the end of the day, the fact that they've made a holiday makes it the brachot have meaning, which should be enough to get around at least the biblical problems of using God's name in vain. Yeah, Yehonatan.
Yeah, so in regards to not saying not to do a mitzvah, but not committing a veira versus doing a mitzvah and committing a veira, I don't understand his reasoning for saying that you can't do the second. I mean, you can still acknowledge that an aveira is wrong, but still say that you should do the mitzvah. I mean, I think it's really more of a question of what do the rabbis think is better, so to say. Is it better to have a mitzvah and an aveira, or is it better to have neither? I think that's really a question, not what the rabbi's role is.
So, this is a bit of a complicated sugya there in Yevamot, but I think the Avnei Nezer is not saying that. The Avnei Nezer is assuming that the reason they don't tell you to violate Isurim is not because they think it's a bad idea. It's because they don't have the authority to do that. Right? They don't have the power to do that. Right? Because the Gemara there bases it on Psukim. Right? Or seems to. It's not clear that it does. The Rambam thinks it's a Svara. Fine. The Rambam thinks it's a Svara. No one's really... The Gemara brings in Psukim. It's not really clear which one is left. Lamaskana. It breaks down at least six ways in Rishonim and Achronim. But where the Avnei Niver is assuming that no, it's not what the rabbis think is better or worse, is that they don't have the authority to tell you to violate an Isser. And what the Avnei Niver derives from that is that it seems to be that they don't have the authority to change Torah, right, or change reality. And for him, telling you to violate an Isser is essentially saying this isn't wrong. Telling you to not do a mitzvah isn't saying this isn't a mitzvah. It's just saying right now there are counter calculations. And look, sometimes you give up on positive things because of counter values. That happens, right? No one is saying that, right? Like, you know, there are reasons. You might say, look, I would enjoy going on vacation, right? But there's a risk of corona, so I won't go on vacation. That doesn't mean going on vacation isn't enjoyable. It isn't good. It just is.
I understand his point there, but it's just that last thing that I disagree with, that the rabbis wouldn't be saying that an avera is not a wrong thing. It's the same thing as a mitzvah, that, you know, the mitzvah here is counterbalanced by the
avera. Correct, but my point is that what you could say that, but what he's noting is the fact that Chazal thinks that they're limited in that way indicates they don't think they can do that. Right? That they can't just tell you, oh, something is wrong, but you should do it anyways. They can't do that, right? That's his assumption. Because that reflects a certain limitation in terms of their authority over biblical law. You're right. And the people, the Yerushalmi, which paskins that Chazal have the right to override the law, even in an active fashion, would say something like that, which is, look, they're not telling you it's not wrong. They're just telling you someone's got to do things which are wrong. Right? Yes. I agree with you. That's a theoretical possibility. It's not the one he's taking in this sugya.
Gotcha.
You're right. It's a theoretical possibility, and that may be what is behind the Yerushalmi's position in general. Okay. Let's finish off this. And again, there's a lot more to say on this, but since Yehonatan was already mechavering to the Chelkat Yoav, good, so we'll see what he says. Which is, we've assumed that what until now, that whatever is true of one rabbinic law is true of everything else. But as Yehonatan notes correctly, that's not necessarily the case. You could take the position, like Tosfot, that the rabbis have the fundamental ability to alter the fabric of Torah reality. But like Rabbeinu Yonah says, that doesn't mean they'll always do it. Right? It might depend on what type of rabbinic law you're talking about. Sometimes such drastic moves make sense, and sometimes such drastic moves don't make sense. So, I could, if we didn't have 8 minutes, I would, you know, we'll take 1 minute, okay? And then I'll look inside. If you had to guess, what type of rabbinic laws would you, assuming you think the rabbis have the authority to take away schar, what types of laws do you think they would employ that authority on, and what type would they not? Me. Yes, Ezra.
They like only do it when performing that action has negative consequences.
Good, right? So it could depend on the consequences, right? That when the negative consequences are, let's say, the violation of a biblical law or a particularly bad biblical law, they're willing to take drastic measures because what's at stake is protecting biblical law. But maybe they won't do it in other cases, like, you know, Kiddush, right? Kiddush, biblically, you can be yotze without wine. Rabbinically, we do it with wine. That doesn't mean that if you did it without wine, you don't fulfill the mitzvah, because why would they do that? What's the worst that'll happen? The worst that'll, right? If they tell you that if you say Kiddush without wine, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah at all, what exactly did they accomplish? They didn't protect a biblical law, right? Well, they want you to do it al hayayin, right? And in fact, lahalacha, the way we pask, right? Many of the achronim note that we probably pask in is that on a biblical level, you may fulfill your mitzvah of Kiddush in Shmoneh Esrei, right? And then you have an added rabbinic mitzvah to do it al hayayin, right? But they're not protecting a biblical law. They're just enhancing the rabbinic way of fulfilling a biblical law. And there, drastic measures aren't called for. Right? So that might be a distinction. And that's basically the distinction the Chelkat Yaakov wants to go for in the Kabbat Dekushyata. But let's look at it quickly. It's not particularly hard Hebrew. It is a little bit long, so I won't make you suffer. I'll read through it. But I think it's a nice summary of the sugya, so it is a good place to end. To sort of wrap up a lot of what we've seen. So he writes, Katav Hagon Rabbi Kiva Eger, Datoke Barosh Hashanah Shechal B'Shabbat, Sha'avar Al Yisur De Rabbanan Shegazur Shelo Litkov, Avar Al Yisur Shvut B'Shabbat, Makom hol mi d'oraita ikam mitzvah l'tko af b'shabbat ki yei mitzvah shofar. Right? That's Rabbi Kiva Eger that we already saw. Rabbi Kiva Eger says, if you blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat, even though you violated the rabbinic law, and you violated a shvut, you fulfill the mitzvah d'oraita. Because that's what he says. The kasha al dvarav. He says, I don't understand Rabbi Kiva Eger. Hachevan shegazru chachamim shelo l'tkoa. Since the rabbi said, don't blow. Va'amitzvah psula midirabanan. So now the mitzvah is invalid rabbinically. Shuv eno yotze af midoraita. Shechachamim bitlu et etzem hamitzvah. So you shouldn't fulfill the mitzvah because the rabbis nullified the very nature of the very essence of the mitzvah. Which Rishon is he going to prove for that thesis? Is he going to invoke for that thesis? You guys tell me, which Rishon? Tosvot in Sukkah. Right? Ukamoshi katvua tosvot v'reish Sukkah, gabe Sukkah psula midirabanan, shul yatsa yidei chovato af midoraita. That's what Tosvot had said. That if you don't fulfill the mitzvah Sukkah the way the rabbi said it, you don't fulfill even the biblical mitzvah. V'af Shaharan. Which Rishon is he going to bring which supports Rabbi Kiva Eger? The Ran. Right? Af Shaharan b'sof psachim nechlak alayem v'sfir le demasha amru d'lo kiyem mitzvah sukkah hainu shalu kiyem kara'ui. The Ran takes the opposite position, which is when you violate the rabbinic law, so you still fulfill the daraita, it's just not perfect. Ach yatsa yidei chova. So now the Chalukat Yoav says maybe the Ran and the Tosfot wouldn't say it in every case. Aval hecha dipachu chachamim legamrei mitzvah. Maybe even the Ran would agree that there are such mitzvot where they would totally exempt you and remove the mitzvah. V'adai ne'karam mitzvah mikol v'chol af l'haran. Ukidemuchach misadin pishtan b'tzitzit shezek kilayim, like wearing tzitzit and kilayim. Skip down to the next paragraph. Next proof. V'od muchach b'reish brachot. The next proof is Rabbeinu Yonah. Right? Kriyat Shema. Quoting Rabbeinu Yonah. Skipping to here. V'katav Rabbeinu Yonah. De'enu chayav klal lekrot klal arach ha-chatzot. Rabbeinu Yonah's second position is, his preferred position is, you don't say Shema after chatzot, even though you would fulfill the mitzvah d'oraita theoretically. And then he says, furthermore, right? He gives another question. He says, if it were true that when the rabbis say don't do something, you still fulfill the mitzvah, so then maybe nowadays that many poskim think we don't have a Rashut HaRabim, we should override the rabbinic law and blow shofar on Shabbat. Because if you say, like Rabbi Kiva Eger, that you actually get a mitzvah, so I understand when there's a real concern that you might carry Arba Amori in Rashut HaRabim. But if there's no real concern that you're going to carry in Rashut HaRabim, then you should forego the rabbinic stricture and blow the shofar nowadays. So it must be that the fact that we don't tell you to do that means Rabbi Kiva Eger is wrong. So now he gives you his thesis. So he says, here's his answer. Yesh li yashev, the answer to all questions is, as Yehonatan said, De'ein kol isurim derabanan shavim. Stop thinking that it's all or nothing, that all rabbinic laws are created equal, and all rabbinic strictures on biblical law are equal. De'heicha de'tiknu chachamim al guf ha'chefetz. Kigon besukho tzitzit du pasul. He said, here's first distinction. If the rabbis made their decree in the object of the mitzvah, meaning they said, this is an invalid sukkah. It's too small rabbinically. So he says, there it makes sense. How are the rabbis going to structure their rule? That it uproots the doraita entirely. Why? Because they're redefining the parameters of what is even called a sukkah. And once they tell you, this is not a sukkah, then what logically follows is, you don't get a mitzvah. So he says, whenever they set their decree on the nature of an object, mehai time elo yatsa, you don't fulfill it at all. But maybe shofar is different, because they didn't tell you this isn't a shofar. They said, right, to use brisker terminology that I really don't want to use right now, chefzer versus gavra, right? He's saying if they redefine the Chefetz Shel Mitzvah, so then you don't fulfill the mitzvah because this is no longer an object of the mitzvah. But if they tell you, the person, don't do something, but they make no claim on redefining the mitzvah, they're just telling you what to do, so then you can imagine that Rabbi Akiva Eiger is right, that what? That you shouldn't do it, but if you do it, it's a mitzvah. So the first distinction he says is whether the nature of the Rabbanan was to redefine the Chefetz Shel Mitzvah, in which case now there is no Chefetz Shel Mitzvah, so you didn't fulfill anything. Or whether they just told you, don't do something. So he says, you could say that Tosfot is right by Sukkah, that you don't fulfill Sukkah, and Rabbi Akiva Eiger is still right by Shofar. Because by Sukkah, they told you, if it's too small, it's not a Sukkah rabbinically. So then you don't fulfill the mitzvah. By Shofar, they said, it is a Shofar, but you shouldn't blow it. If that's all they said, maybe, so then you shouldn't blow it, but if you do, it's a mitzvah. Yeah, Yuri.
Does that mean that, let's say by tzitzis, which is, we would assume it's considered on the chefta of the beged, right? Well, it's, I mean, it's a machlokas, I guess, but...
It's a machlokas, yes, exactly.
Right, but if it was on the chefta, and you,
correct.
You did what the gezeira said not to do, that means you never got your mitzvah.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
Right, exactly. So he says, Masha ingen begzeira the rabba shlod kobishover shafat, who is al adam, bazel orminen, di avid lo mahani. Second distinction... Oh, this was Ezra's distinction, I think, or Yonatan's, one of you, or both of you. Od yesh lomar, dibigzer chachamim segazur kedei shelo yavo liisur harei shanu mechashvim over al gzerak over al isur shemenu chashashu. Now he makes a very radical claim. You could make it without the last twist he puts in it. He says any rabbinic law which they set up to protect you from violating an isur, he thinks that if you go ahead and blow the shofar, Chazal make it sort of, somehow, I don't know how he does do this, as if you violated the Isser that they were trying to prevent you from violating in the first place. But he says, or put it slightly differently, he says like this, when the rabbi set up a protective gzera, what you should do is imagine that you actually violated the Isser. Let's say you actually carried Arba Amot Bereshut HaRabim. So now, and now you blow the shofar. Would you fulfill the mitzvah before the gzera? Right, before the gzera, if you actually carried four Amot Bereshut HaRabim to blow the shofar, would you fulfill the mitzvah? Yes. Why? Because it's not a mitzvah baba avera. I see Rami is looking quizzically. Why is it not a mitzvah baba avera? Because by time you blow the shofar, you finished violating the Isser. And the rule is, mitzvah baba avera is only... Right, it's only going to prevent you when the mitzvah and the avera happen at the same time. So he says very cleverly, he says, look, the Chazal said you shouldn't blow shofar on Shabbat because you might carry Arba Amot Bereshut HaRabim. But let's say you did carry Arba Amot Bereshut HaRabim and then blew the shofar. So what would you get? You'd be chayav mitah, right? We'd have to put you to death. But in the meantime, when you got to heaven, God would say, but you blew the shofar, right? So he says, if that's true, even if you actually violated what they were worried about, so then Rabbi Akiva Eiger makes sense. Because whenever that which you're worried about, even if it actually happened, would not prevent you from fulfilling the mitzvah, so then you can't tell me I didn't fulfill the mitzvah. Even if I carried on Shabbat, I would fulfill the mitzvah. I would just also be chayav mitah. Side point. Death penalty. Okay. Not great, admittedly. But I'd fulfill shofar. That's his second possible distinction, which is, imagine you actually violated the Derabbanan, or even the Daraita. How would that affect the mitzvah? If it wouldn't affect the mitzvah, then neither will the rabbinic rule. Possibility three, okay, I'm running over time, so I'll do it quickly. Ogish l'chalik, possibility, third possible distinction, bein hecha shegazru chachamim vitil Yisrael kiyum mitzvah bofen zeke gon sukkor kriyat shema, does etzem Yisrael Derabbanan kiyum a mitzvah, v'avelek a mitzvah ba'avera, he said it might also depend when the rabbis tell you how to perform a mitzvah, like sukkah. Do the mitzvah in this type of sukkah, or say kriyat shema in this way. There, they're clearly trying to influence the performance of the mitzvah itself. By the shofar, they're worried about something external to shofar blowing, and therefore they say don't blow, but they're not saying blow in this way. They're not trying to affect shofar blowing itself. So similar to the second answer, they seem not to be trying to affect the nature of the mitzvah itself, and therefore you should fulfill the mitzvah. Fourth possibility is maybe shofar is different because since in the Mikdash they blew the shofar, that indicates that even rabbinically they didn't totally eliminate the mitzvah. Maybe that's why Rabbi Akiva Eiger thinks that you get the mitzvah. So it might depend on whether they limit the performance of the mitzvah everywhere, in which case they seem to have tried to affect the mitzvah itself, or only in some places. Distinction five is maybe it depends on whether the mitzvah is bizman or not. Because since shofar is so limited, maybe they want it to be lenient on you. I don't really understand this one. But make it, if you blew it, you fulfill the mitzvah. Okay, that's a little bit weird. Yuri's point before, it could be that maybe sukkah and tzitzit are different. Because only in these cases, presumably, they affect the cheftza so directly. Right? So you won't fulfill tzitzit, you won't fulfill sukkah. But that's because those are the only mitzvah where they really targeted the cheftza. He says, or maybe it's just not true, right? Maybe they got rid of the chiyuv, but there is a mitzvah, and that's a general rule. So he doesn't come with a single answer, but what he distinguishes, and here he gave you seven different possible ways of doing this, right, of making these chilukim, but what he argues, compellingly, is that, broadly speaking, we saw the Tosfah, which is one model. You don't fulfill the mitzvah. The Ron says you do. What he says is, it may be that what's true of one area of halacha is not true of the others. And again, he says, the distinctions may be cases where Chazal tried to affect the cheftza and cases where they didn't. Cases where, if you actually performed the avera they were worried about, it wouldn't affect the mitzvah, or it wouldn't. Cases where it's also everywhere, or cases where it's only us or outside the mikdash, so you see it's already a limited zera to begin with, etc. And again, you can accept some or all or none of his distinctions, but the point is, well taken, as Yehonatan said before, is that it's possible that what's true in one area of halacha won't be true everywhere, and it will depend in each case on the way the rabbis set it up. But I'll just note that all of this, again, assumes that the rabbis have the authority to change the d'oraita. Right? Once you say the rabbis have no authority over the d'oraita, then the chelkat Yoav is always wrong. Right? Once you say they have the authority to change the d'oraita, so then you can start making distinctions and say they could do it, but when does it make sense for them to do it? And again, he brings many distinctions. You don't have to accept all of them. But b'kitzur, Yehonatan is right. That it was a bit cheating for us to start as saying that what's true in one place is true in the other. That's not necessarily the case. Which of his exact formulations you want to accept, or you want to come up with 10 of your own, right? Is it, you know, I'm happy for you to come up with different formulations, but fundamentally the notion that there may be many distinctions you can make with nuances that would affect which type of rabbinic power we implement, that fundamentally is what the Chelkat Yoav takes as a given, which Yehonatan took as a given. Which distinction you accept, that's up to you. Guys, it has been a great 2 weeks. You guys, I'm impressed both at your reading and definitely at your analysis and the work you guys put in quarantine. I know it's been hard. Shkoyach, enjoy the vacation. It's well deserved. And we'll pick up. I hope to see you next week at some point on the stopping in on the trip. Ezra has a question. Rami has a question. Go.
Oh, no.
No? Okay.
I don't have a question.
Okay.
Sorry, no, it was just a wave. Oh.